Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Ira Harris. He's a world-recognized trader with over 40 years of experience in areas of commodities and futures trading, with broad expertise in currency markets. He has a proven track record on successful trading through a combination of technical work and fundamental analysis of global trends, historically based analysis on global money flows. And he served as a member of the board of Chicago Mercantile Exchange, CME. He's a floor broker and a floor trader, regular guest on Bloomberg and CNBC. Welcome, Ira.
Richard, nice to be with you again in these tumultuous times. Even though the markets have low volatility, they're still tumultuous. Where shall we begin?
Yeah, I thought we'd begin with some of your recent writings. You point out a very significant speech from the FOMC Governor Lyle Brainard. She delivered what you think to be a very important speech, and it potentially has significant implications to the financial markets and monetary policy. So her speech had to do with the shrinking of the balance sheet while halting further interest rate increases. Your thoughts?
Well, those are my thoughts, and I found it so very interesting because she delivered this speech yesterday, and when I first saw some of the headlines, because don't forget, the media always gets this media. Whoever gets quarantined, they get it a half an hour early so that they can, you know, dissect it and put out what they think the most salient parts are. And when I saw it, I said, this is kind of interesting. Enough piqued my interest, so I went and read it twice within the first half hour that it actually hit, the full speech hit, which was at 1 o'clock Eastern time. So, and I found it fascinating. Then I reread it one more time late in the afternoon. I said, this speech is a significant speech because it reminded me, as I wrote in the blog, so much of when Don Cohn used to do used to write great speeches when he was Fed vice chairman, and was basically, I think, Alan Greenspan's sounding board, because he was had the intelligence to be Alan Greenspan's sounding board. And so his speeches were really interesting to read and dissect at the time. And I view Lyle Brainard in the same way. She's a Fed governor, and her and Yellen seem to be confidants, as I say, or in a more light fashion. She plays the role of Jiminy Cricket for Janet Yellen, where she sits on her shoulder, and I think the two of them share a lot of inner thoughts. So the piece was dynamic in that way, because it laid out why the Fed is willing to stop, as she calls it, using interest rate policy, meaning Fed funds, and that they would be quicker to do the balance sheet shrinkage, and that they need not do both together. And I found that quite interesting. And then the speech went on to detail out why they thought this way, and especially when it came to what the headline of the speech was, which was cross-border impact of the policy. So I found it more than passing. And of course, I tried to put together, as I'm wont to do, some trading ideas, because, you know, again, I'm a trader. We can all have long-term investment ideas, but the way I make my living is taking my ideas and putting them to work. And when I see things that I have to adjust to, I adjust. And this was one of them, because what it told me a few things. It told me that they really don't want the dollar going up and are concerned about it. It told me that they were concerned about the recent, and something we've discussed, you and I and others on this, on these podcasts, which is the flattening of the yield curves. They did not like what they were seeing there. They did not want the curves flattening, no matter whether you think it's indicative of a coming recession. They didn't get severe enough, but they did not want the curves flattening. And that was really important. And they're not really in a hurry to raise interest rates, because they're worried that they're not seeing the inflation impact that they would have liked to have seen from the job level. So all those things. And it told me I have to rethink this, but I really made it significant, call it significant, because it really lays out in a way we usually don't get what the inner sanctum of the Fed is thinking about.
Yeah, you, as you mentioned, you believe that the speech did more to impact markets than the emails of Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah, because right prior to this, we were seeing the impact. You know, the stock market, I use the S&Ps as a proxy, was falling because of these, you know, the concept of the idea of, well, the Trump, you know, they've been lying and therefore he's vulnerable. So those tweets keep coming out, the stock market kept breaking. And then, of course, it stopped, which was good because it's hard to wrap your head around what I call the buffoonery of these tweets and this tweet-based White House, where all it is, you know, narrative spinning anyway. But then the market started to reverse and to go higher, or at least, you know, to retrace. And then when I read Rayner's speech, I said, well, this has a far greater impact, because the market will love the fact that the Fed will stop raising the Fed funds and will actually start moving to shrinking the balance sheet. Now, even Rayner makes a statement, which I know that we've discussed here. When it comes to foreign currencies, it's more the short-term interest rates that have a greater impact on currency movements. And I've been trading for 40 years, and I will tell you for 35 years of that, I have found that to be true. That if you really want to impact a foreign currency, whether you're trying to manipulate your currency as a tool of economic policy, cutting short-term rates will, of course, hurt your currency. And raising long-term, short-term rates immediately will impact your currency favorably. Look, we don't have to look far beyond that than to see the action today in Dollar Canada. The Canadian dollar is trading at multi-year highs today, and we're down at 127.18. So that's a very significant move. And all that took was a 25 basis point increase from 50 basis points to 75 basis points on the overnight rate from the Bank of Canada. And of course, Governor Pelosi was a little more hawkish, but that was expected because the Canadian dollar has been performing fairly well, pretty well against a whole list of other currencies. So here we are, we're sitting at the Canadian dollar is approaching 18 months highs. So we'll see where this goes, but there it is. And Brainard spoke to that. So they were concerned that the dollar, by holding Fed fund rates here, that it wouldn't have as much impact on cross-border currency flows. And that was a very telltale sign.
And what about the effects of this in Europe and Germany on the equity markets there, in terms of if the Fed begins shrinking its balance sheet, do you see that as being bullish or outperforming for German and European equity markets?
Well, I put in my piece the last two pieces I wrote, that I like German equities, even though you're getting technical sell signals across various equities, including the German on a longer term basis. But when you listen to what the central banks say, would I rather, you know, my attitude is, you know, and I'm a relative value seeker. So to me, Germany as a stock market has much better relative value. They have negative interest rates. They have budget surpluses, current account surpluses. They're not ridiculously valued, overvalued on a historical basis, you know, whether you use CAPE measurements or whatever else you choose to use. And it's really the only place for German investors to park their money. And if you use the DAX, I think they have about 10% of it of the DAX is in high tech. The rest is in very sound, stable German corporations. And, you know, so I like that on a relative value regardless. And then today, or in yesterday's FT, there was an interesting article that the Free Democrats, the FDP, who have been out of government for a while, but they're starting to rise in the polls coming into September's election. And the big thing they're pushing on is a very massive tax cut for Germany. And, you know, everybody on the planet wants to see Germany with a massive tax cut to try to, you know, generate more consumption and therefore reduce the current account and the trade balances of Germany and even their budget balance. So those are all support measures to why I like the German stock market most of all, especially relative to the U.S. stock market. So that's what I'm looking at. I think it makes a lot of sense. And they have a bank that is going to continue on doing quantitative easing called the ECB. Now, this could change dramatically after the September elections, but up until that point, I think I look for the German market to outperform all others. And on any type of weakness relative to the other markets, I'm a buyer unless there's, you know, one of those geopolitical events that happens that will force me to redirect. But that's the way that I see it. And with this whole thing, and Brainard was actually, this is one of the things I loved about what she had to say, because this is to me very smart. I wonder why they haven't done it before. When you've got the ECB still buying and you got the BOJ, who's captured by their own lunacy under Kuroda, still buying significant amounts of sovereign bonds and other assets on a monthly basis, it's a good time to start shrinking your balance sheet, because if you believe, as I do, until told otherwise, that money is fungible on a global basis, right? As long as you got a central bank's buying, let me experiment with what I have to do here, and the impact will be far less than it would be otherwise. Now, the worst, you know, I still say that if the Fed embarks on this, that the market's not going to be as gentle in letting them out as their models believe. And that's even with the other foreign central bank buying. And Richard Koo had a very good piece on the FT Alphaville, you know, saying that this is not going to be as easy as they think, and there's going to be all kinds of, you know, repercussions on the long end of the market. But to tell you the truth, I don't think the Fed is really that concerned about it right now. I think they would love, from what everything I read through Brainard, they would love to see a steepening of the U.S. curve that would help the banks. Whether they raise rates or not on the short end, it'll help the banks. It'll get them healthier. And then they'll use the banks also to be buyers of more of the asset bases that they're trying to lop off the balance sheet. So all in all, I think it's a splendid idea. As long as Mario Draghi wants to buy a lot of paper, as we used to say in the trading pits, when the ducks are quacking, feed them.
Yeah. And can you connect the dots for us in terms of you mentioned the budget surplus in Germany, and you wrote recently about how the Draghi QE program may be violating some key capital adequacy ratios, you know,
yes,
relating to Basel Accord.
Well, it's not the Basel Accord. It's their key capital that are written into the ECB bylaws about how they can do this. So there are restrictions, and you know that was an article that came from the FT. I believe it was from the FT, maybe somewhere else. But the BIS has been on them about this, but they don't really care. Again, you know, because that goes back to what is Draghi really trying to accomplish here. And my conjecture, and I think it has a lot of validity. Again, these are economic things, and you can't prove them as if it was a scientific experiment. But what seems to be taking place is that he's in a rush, as I said, to build that balance sheet, because they're going to take that balance sheet that the ECB's built up and eventually create a Eurozone bond. You know, that's the Soros school of thought process, and he's violating the capital keys, because he's supposed to buy, if you're going to buy $1 billion of assets, you have to do it according to everybody's capital contribution to the ECB. you can't violate that. But he's been violating it because there's politics involved in it. And the biggest issue, and I know you and I discussed this probably a year ago, that there's just not enough German paper to buy.
Yeah.
You know, you got a country that's running a budget surplus. They're running a budget surplus.
Yeah. And so you're saying they're buying more of Italian bonds of French bonds?
Yeah, so he buys more French and more Italian because they're more available. And there's also a political dimension to it. Believe me, Italy has got severe problems. They're in total violation of the Maastricht Agreement. They've never been not in violation. But when you know, under the Maastricht Accord, you're supposed to never exceed a 3% or less. Extraordinary circumstances, can you exceed a 3% annualized a GDP, debt to GDP for a year, and you're not to exceed 60%, I think the number is, on the debt to GDP ratio. Well, Italy's at 134%, and it's grown even in the realm of ultra low and negative interest rates. So that's not a good sign going forward, because if the economy starts to grow, Italy will never be able to outgrow what its financing needs are for its deficit. So it's a problem, but he knows that. And with all the issues of non-performing loans in the Italian banking system, Draghi knows he's got a problem. So of course he's going to violate this, because one thing we know about Europe and all the bureaucrats in Europe, rules, you can write all the rules you want. They'll perform to what they need to perform. And that's what the last 6 years have for sure shown us. They'll do whatever needs to be done under the guise of, well, and Draghi said it, whatever it takes, whatever it takes. So under that rubric of whatever it takes, he'll do whatever he needs to do. So, but it is an issue, and we'll see if it leaks into the issue of the German elections.
Now, could whatever it takes also translate into potential buying by the ECB of German equities? You know, we've talked about the SNB buying equities to implement monetary policy and also the Bank of Japan, but could this translate at some point into the ECB buying German equities?
Sure, why not? And that's one more brick into why I like that relative trade. So thank you for building the case even more.
Okay. And just finally, your thoughts on the G20 meeting, how that went, what the results were, implications to monetary policy, fiscal policy?
Yeah, it really didn't have much. I was expecting to see more in the communique about a massive infrastructure, all agreement to a massive infrastructure. We didn't get that. Of course, you know, they came in, they wanted to isolate Trump. And it's not hard to do that. And they did it. So, you know, as some news line headlines had it, you know, it was 19-1. Okay. You know what? And we had all the riots, but anybody who wasn't expecting those types of demonstrations really doesn't pay attention to what goes on in the world. Because these have been, you know, go back to Seattle, 1909. They've been disastrous. And of course you were in Hamburg, which has a history of being left oriented, so it was kind of easy to get everybody there. And they made their statement. It was, you know, anti the Davos capitalist crowd. That's what it was about. But I think it was such a nothing meeting. When you're portraying Xi, President Xi of China, as the free trader, you got a lot of problems. In Europe, free trade, you know what? Europe is a free trader when it wants to be a free trader. And France is notorious for tariffs and blocking trade procedures. So, you know, and I know we'll get to the other issues, but it's nothing really came out of this. You know, it's a photo op, as I tongue in cheek call it, you know, Snapchat, because as soon as the photos disappear, you forget that they were ever there anyway. So, you know, that's where it lies. There's nothing there. There's absolutely nothing there. Just, everybody can shake hands and talk and get nothing done. First of all, because they really have no power to get anything done. So, yeah, it's nice. But I was really expecting more out of the infrastructure conversation that didn't develop this time. But that covers it about it.
Do you make anything of the Japan-EU agreement?
No. I've argued with my son, who's a Japan expert. We had a discussion yesterday. It's not an argument, discussion, because I don't think this will see the light of day in its present form. They'll go through all kinds of, jump through all kinds of hoops. And I think the biggest blocker will be the German automakers, because as I read this agreement, there's a lot of agricultural stuff that gets allowed into Japan, but the auto end of it is very interesting. And you know, every nation has to have their say about it and agree to it. So it'll be a long, drawn-out process. You know, the media made it seem like it's immediate. It's not anywhere near immediate. And I think about how long the Canadian-European trade deal took to work itself out. And that was, you know, nothing compared to what this is purportedly about.
Well, very interesting. Great insight. Thank you very much. Ira, how can our listeners learn more about your work?
You know, go to iraharris.com and Notes from Underground, and they can sign up for the blog, and it's free, and you get into the discussion.
Great. Thank you very much, Ira.
Thank you, Richard.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only, and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.